Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Colton in Washington, D.C. The M23 rebel group commits to withdrawing from territories it controls in the eastern part of the DRC.
The M23 is committed to implement the resolution derived from the mini summit of Luanda. The M23 has already given its position of Kibumba and Rumangabu to the due care of the Eastern African Regional Forces.
A political pressure group says a new cash withdrawal policy by the Nigeria Central Bank could help thwart vote buying in the upcoming February presidential vote.
It is very obvious and visible that this policy was aimed at preventing vote buying. You can see that even all the futures on the old notes are still visibly present in the new notes. You know, and it's a step in the right direction.
And the UN's children's agency, UNICEF, hands over life-saving supplies to support Malawi's fight against a cholera outbreak. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The French news agency AFP reports that a bomb killed at least five people on Sunday after detonating in a church in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. Details of the attack remain hazy, but military spokesman Anthony Mwalushai says the terrorist act happened in the Pentecostal church in North Kivu province's Kasindi, a town on the border with Uganda. Mwalushai later told reporters that at least five bodies had been taken to the morgue following the blast in what he calls a provisional death toll. Joel Kitaosa, a local civil society figure, put the death toll at eight and said 27 other people had been wounded. The AFP was not able to independently confirm the toll. It is not immediately clear who carried out the attack. Mwalushai says that one suspect, a Kenyan, has been arrested. The DRC's communication ministry says on social media that the attack was apparently carried out by the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, group. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, the M23 rebel group says it is committed to withdrawal from territories it controls in the eastern part of the country. The group's political spokesperson, Lawrence Kanyuka, says the M23 seeks direct dialogue with the government without preconditions as part of the effort to end the conflict. The remarks come after Kenya's former president, Uhuru Kenyatta, says the rebels will continue to withdraw from areas they recently captured. The former Kenyan leader is mediating the effort to find peace by stopping the conflict in the DRC. For more about the rebel group's withdrawal plans, I reach its political spokesperson, Lawrence Kanyuka.
The M23 is committed to implement the resolution derived from the mini summit of Luanda. The M23 has already given its position of Kibumba and Rumangabu to the due care of the Eastern African Regional Forces, and the M23 will continue to do so in the name of peace. However, the M23 called upon the DRC government to honor the ceasefire and for once to respect the resolution derived from the mini summit of Luanda.
So, Lawrence, how can this be verified? Because there have been instances where the M23 promised they were leaving but never left. And even a UN report recently said that claims that you have left some parts of the country and that it cannot be verified. So who will verify this commitment from the M23?
The M23 has given its position to the East African community regional forces. And in the moment as I'm speaking to you, the position of Kibumba and Rumangabo are in the due care of East African regional forces, and they can vouch for it. And the report you're talking about, I don't know how long this report has been drafted or that from when. So what I'm trying to tell you really right now, we need to move forward for peace. Let us make this peace happen for now, because the M23 has already given its said position according to the agenda given by the East African community, which M23 has totally respect. So if you want to verify, get in touch with the East African community to verify if the M23 still holds those positions. But for me to tell you, the M23 has already given those positions to the East African community regional forces.
Were your expectations met and your concerns addressed when the M23 leadership met with former Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, who is the mediator, to try to find solutions to the concerns you have and the conflict in the DRC?
Indeed, the meeting went well, and I hereby seize this opportunity to thank His Excellency Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta, the facilitator, for the wisdom and the knowledge he has and his endless work to find peace in the DRC. At the same time, we're calling up the international community to intervene and stop the massacre that's happening in the North Kivu against the Tutsi, in the Turi against the Hema, in South Kivu against the Banyamulenge. All this has done by the DRC government coalition forces.
After the meeting and the withdrawal by M23, what is next for the M23? Will you disarm and leave?
The M23 movement is a Congolese organization, and we are Congolese citizens. The M23 is committed to implement the resolution derived from the mini summit of Luanda in the name of peace. The M23 is seeking a direct dialogue with the DRC government in a way to solve the root causes of the conflict that make us having wars in our country every single time. The M23 is calling as well to the DRC government to respect the ceasefire and for once to honor the resolution they have from the mini summit of Luanda.
Do you think that the direct dialogue with the government would solve all the concerns or problems or challenges that you have in DRC?
The security issue in the DRC is tremendous, starting from Ituri, North Kivu, South Kivu, Maluku, Kwamutu, Tanganyika. A dialogue is going to be a starting point for us to address the root causes of the conflict in a way to achieve a lasting peace in our country.
Lawrence Kanyuka is the political spokesperson for the M23 Rebel Group. He spoke with me from the DRC.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America.
A political pressure group says a cash withdrawal policy recently implemented by the Nigeria Central Bank could help thwart vote buying in the upcoming February presidential vote. Concerned Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law says voter irregularities, including vote buying and selling during the election period, have played a role in undermining the credibility of polls. Electoral reform advocates say politicians and their enablers often use cash to influence elections. They are calling on authorities to clamp down on vote buying, which they say enables the only rich candidates to win polls. The cash withdrawal limit, they argue, is a first step in discouraging the practice. The central bank's revised cash withdrawal policy for individuals and organizations is 500,000 naira, which is $1,111, and 5 million naira, which is $11,103, respectively. Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concerned Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He tells me that vote buying is cause for concern in Nigeria.
Yes, I'm one of those Nigerians that insists that CBN should stick to the withdrawal policy. the limit cash withdrawal just for the pendency until after the election, and they can revert back to status quo. It is very obvious and visible that this policy was aimed at preventing vote buying. You can see that even all the futures on the old notes are still visibly present in the new notes. You know, and it's a step in the right direction, because those who had hitherto stored billions in their homes or factories, you know, would not have been able to carry out their evil enterprise as regards to the elections. You know, so all that was needed was for Emefiele to have some courage and some scruples. But, you know, he failed. And it is very unfortunate that the CBN is cowing. The CBN should be an independent organ. It's cowing to the dictates of politicians, you know, and vested interest individuals. So very unfortunate and regrettable.
Deji, how significant do you think this new policy is in the fight against vote buying? Because some people are saying that if somebody has his own money at the bank, why should they be restricted from withdrawing?
Yeah, it's indeed very significant. If it wasn't significant, you wouldn't see this level of pushback by the political actors against the CBN. It's one of the most profound decisions that has ever been taken in recent history against vote buying in the country. You know, and it is for the purpose of ensuring the elections are credible. And we all know that elections are tied to everything in any republic. And electoral malpractice is the greatest sabotage that can be done to or against any nation. You know, so it's indeed very instructive. And in a decent and sane society, the Apex Bank will be commended for such a noble gesture. And critical stakeholders, we understand that it's about ensuring electoral sanity in the system. But alas, ours is not a nation of reasonable people. Political actors only care about their interest, you know, and that's why we are seeing this pushback.
But Deji, what do you say to those who are saying that prospective Nigerian voters are also equally to blame for accepting money to sell their vote, and that as long as there is selling, there will be buyers?
Yes, indeed. I agree to a large extent that many Nigerians are badly behaved, and that as a nation, the leaders are a product of the citizenry, and that many Nigerians are the ones actually urging politicians on to buy their votes, you know, and many Nigerians are too willing to sell their votes. However, we will not say because people like to commit crime, therefore government will not put steps in place to prevent commission of crime. So the onus is on the government, the security agencies, to make vote buying impossible, to make the political actors conform to the rules, and to ensure that votes counts across all boards. Thank you.
As political activists and human rights defenders like your group, for human rights defenders and activists like you, what role do you think civil society organizations can play in helping to educate the masses to eschew vote selling, which basically elicits vote buying?
Yes, it's very simple that vote buying or vote selling by the electorate is just a temporary relief, which cannot last beyond 2 to 3 days after they collect the 5,000 naira. And a 4-year mandate cannot be worth 5,000. And in many cases, it's usually less. You know, people should realize that the reason why they have bad hospitals, bad schools, bad roads, bad everything, you know, lack of accountability, is because of the consequences of selling their votes. This is what we have been doing over the years, and civil society and critical actors must continue to do, because that is the only way that we can highlight some of these issues. I am of the view, just in sync with so many other civil rights activists in the country, that the police, the security agencies need more educating than even the citizenry, the security agencies as a whole, that they have a larger chunk of responsibility and work to do to ensure prevention of commission of crime, because vote buying is a criminal offense under the Electoral Act.
Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Nigeria, the civil society group, the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety, is expressing concern that recent military postings could have a negative impact on the coming February presidential election. The group says the postings are unconstitutional and could tilt the election in favor of the ruling party's candidate, an allegation both the military and the governing All People's Congress reject. They say security organizations, including the army, have over the years demonstrated neutrality. They call the allegations unpatriotic and an affront to the men and women in uniform. To learn more about the group's concerns, I reach Emeka Umiagbalasi. He is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety.
As you may have read, Nigerian Army released the list of postings. And if you look at that list of postings, the list has a kind of ethno-religious connotation, whereby there is this systematic, flooding of officers of Northern Modernist extraction to eastern part of Nigeria, which is predominantly Christian to the point of 90%. And before now, the activities of the army, Nigerian army, have been nothing to write home about. And that is the situation. So with the recent postings, a lot of critics are, raising some critical questions over the rationale behind the suddenness of the postings and the identities of those being posted. And the critics, concerned arose from what happened in 2019 general election, particularly the presidential election, where the military played very critical role in manipulating the election, including chasing away, scaring away of many voters and inflicting fears on people, creating a kind of what we call state actor insecurity.
The Nigerian army prides itself as being non-political and protects the territorial integrity of Nigeria. From both domestic and external forces. So saying that their recent posting has political undertones basically is an insult to the Nigerian and an affront to the Nigerian army. How do you respond to such criticism?
This is not a homogeneous society. Nigeria is a multi-ethnic and multi-religious and multicultural society. And even the constitution says so. So whatever thing that whatever securitization arrangement that is to be made must have to be, captured realistically. So if Nigerian Army tells you, the truth of the matter is that since 2015, July 2015, the Nigerian Army no longer used to be what it used to be. That is the truth of the matter. I will give you an instance. At the federal level, we have 22 top military, justice, policing, offices, office holders. And out of these 22, 19, held by Northern Muslims. Only three are from the South. So, but that has been the serious concern. So, Nigerian Army telling the world that it is apolitical, it is professional, it is that. It's not true.
Politicians have said that Nigerian military promotion is by merit and not any ethno-religious sentiment. So basically that really undermines or dirties up the confidence people repose in the army to do its job. And by raising these concerns, people lose confidence in the ability of the not only the army, but other security agencies. And that creates the avenue for Islamic militant groups like Boko Haram to really cause havoc, because people lose confidence in them, they really are able or easily recruited by someone else. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, sure. If the army conduct itself the way it's supposed to be, people will not lose confidence. We are by in a country where some people are more protected than the other on the ground of religion or ethnicity. you know, says it says it all. You know us, you know the antecedent of inter-society. We don't just say things. We are researchers, we are investigators. And I can tell you that our complaints are very genuine and grounded. And as election approaches, it is expected that if, for instance, you are sending, posting army military officers in southern part of the country, you must have to recognize the ethnic and religious composition, identities of the southern people. So if you are posting senior officers there, you should also have this thing at the back of your mind. But whereby you have, for instance, seven military army brigades in the south, and out of these seven army brigades in the south, six are manned by officers of Hausa Fulani Muslims. In southern part of the country, that means that has about 90% Christian population. How can you defend that?
Emeka Omiagbalasi is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety. He spoke with me from Onitsha in Nigeria's Anambra State. His Ghanaian policy advisor credited with playing a key role in boosting rice production in Nigeria, former parliamentarian Ibrahim Juma Odum, who provided technical support and direction for the effort, says the blueprint he established to ensure food sufficiency can be replicated throughout Africa. Odum is currently in Ghana, where he says he is encouraging youth to get into farming. This, analysts say, would help increase food production and reduce unemployment. I reach Ibrahim Juma Odum to talk about his success in Nigeria and how it can help other countries reduce food shortages.
In Liberia, I realized their staple food was rice, yet most of it was being imported. Then I said, no, let me do a concept paper for rice and cocoa, as I'm here for cocoa, so that we could handle it as an African issue. So I did that paper, and like I said, and I sent you that a picture, Michigan State University and Cat Hunger and Poverty Foundation, USA, bought into the idea, scale it up for it to become a business model. Which business model Bill and Melinda Gates bought into it and partnered J.A. Kufuor Foundation to do it in four African countries, Ghana, Burkina, Nigeria, and Tanzania. And then the project was divided into two components, the technical component and then the what we call the networking or policy advocacy component.
Looking at where Nigeria started, what is the collaboration between the federal government, the state government, and efforts that you made in order to ensure that enough rice is grown to cater for the Nigerian market locally?
The stakeholders meeting, Federal Ministry of Agriculture was involved. Central Bank was involved. All the financial institutions were involved. And in one of the meetings, now, during the reorganization, I happened to be in Jigawa State, where the Central Bank was at the meeting. And then the development officer over there told us that there was funding available at the Central Bank that could be used for import substitution. It was there and there that we wrote to Central Bank. And then Central Bank said, yes, we have this money. If you guys are serious and you are going to address all the challenges that you have raised, then we could help you. So it was there that Central Bank came out with the idea of what we call in Nigeria as the Anchor Borrower Project, where the project was anchored on the miller, the farmer, and then the input dealers. So the bank, the Central Bank, will give the loan to the commercial bank on lending to the trade partners at 7%, and then they will lend it to the stakeholders, the three stakeholders at 9%. So the money will be given to the miller. Then the miller will ensure that he pays the input dealer to supply the right quality and quantity of seeds and inputs to the farmers.
When did it dawn on your team, including yourself, that this could be replicated across Nigeria and that Nigeria could be rice sufficient?
Now, all these things were happening between 2014, 2015, 2016. So within the 3 years, we were able to put up all the structures that gave Nigeria the capacity and the enablement to do it. Meanwhile, we were involving ECOWAS, we were involving FAO, WHO, all those international organizations that had something to do with agriculture, they were all involved. So no wonder currently in ECOWAS, we have what we call the Competitive African Rice Project, of where all the West African countries are subscribing to it to ensure that they would replicate the blueprint of Nigeria in all other West African countries.
So what are you currently doing in order to help Ghana achieve what you help Nigeria to achieve?
You know, so National Service Secretariat called me when I came from Nigeria that they wanted us to do something about the youth. You know, our youth are no longer interested in agriculture. So what we are trying to do is to do an integrated farm in the Afram Plains, where currently we have about 20,000 secured land. And our idea is to use part of it to do aquaculture, to do rice, maize, and then poultry farm. And then, if possible, ensure that we use the droppings of these animals, including the aquaculture, as fertilizer. And fortunately for us, because we had that program and we had that mentality of using manure and for that matter, organic fertilizer, I started a project where we have used poultry droppings, and the result that we got was very interesting and very amazing.
Abraham Juma Odum is a former Ghanaian parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the Afram Plains in Ghana's eastern region. The UN's Children Agency, UNICEF, has handed over life-saving supplies worth about $300,000 to support Malawi's fight against a cholera outbreak which has killed more than 700 people, including 104 children, since the outbreak began in March of last year. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
The supplies include acute watery diarrhea kits, high-performance stents, antibiotics, and other medicines and medical supplies. The donation follows Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera's December 5 declaration of a public health emergency and appeal for local and international support in the fight against the cholera outbreak. Rudolf Schwenk is the country representative for UNICEF in Malawi.
We will continue to support the Ministry of Health to scale up the cholera response. And we fully appreciate the tireless efforts from frontline health and community workers to manage the influx of cholera cases, with more than 6,200 children already affected and more than 100 deaths. The spread of this outbreak is a threat to the health and well-being of children.
UNICEF says it secured the supplies and chartered a special flight to Malawi with support from the European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operations. Statistics from the Public Health Institute of Malawi show that as of Thursday, the disease had killed 773 people, including 104 children, and resulted in 23,217 cases since the outbreak started in March last year. Maziko Matemba is Community Health Ambassador in Malawi. He says the supplies come at a time when Malawi is in critical need of them.
This call upon on government and its key stakeholders to find a mechanism on how to prepare emergency of this nature, because they will be keep on coming.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by ingesting food or water contaminated with bacteria. The disease affects both children and adults, and if untreated, can kill within hours. The Malawi Minister of Health says the fatality rate of the outbreak is now at 3.33%, much higher than the recommended 1% global threshold. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music, from our African collection. But first, let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Undoubtedly, recent shifts in the power, balance, and influence in the international system have enhanced Africa's possibilities of pursuing continental interests. Make no mistake about this. This particular issue is seen in the context of a united African states within the African Union, and a coordinated approach to the continental policy as was done in the first decade of the Organization of African Unity, OAU, during its first decade. The possibilities now is what should be done. The major powers are taking notice. Look, for example, the travel schedule of the major powers within the last 3 months of last year. And now in January, the newly minted foreign minister of China, Qin Gang, followed the traditional policy of China to send any new foreign minister first to the African continent. He paid a visit to the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa for consultations with African Union officials and its European officials. During that visit, he helped inaugurate a major infrastructural plan for disease control in Africa, largely financed by China. The Chinese foreign minister then proceeded to Angola, then to Benin, and will be moving to Egypt, where he will also meet with Egyptian officials and visit the Arab League headquarters. In the few days after the Chinese visit to Ethiopia, the foreign ministers of France and Germany also visited the African Union headquarters for discussions with officials and Ethiopian officials. During their mission, they made a pledge that both France and Germany will support two permanent seats for African states in a reformed Security Council, a major campaign of the African states. You must also recall that last January, in a summit between President Biden and heads of state of Africa, he reaffirmed a major message he had given to this General Assembly, that America would support a permanent seat for Africa in the Security Council. China and Russia have previously supported the African campaign for permanent seat in the Security Council. Should the United Kingdom reaffirm its position for permanent seats for Africa in the Council, this would mean that all five permanent members have now accepted to give Africa a permanent seat in the Security Council. We must take note, however, that only France, in the context of the meeting in Addis Ababa, had agreed to two permanent seats. Consequently, although there have been shifts, very good shifts for Africa in this campaign for permanent seats, we will need some more clarification. Are the four other permanent members willing to give two permanent seats? Also, Africans should not be too euphoric, believing that the campaign is over. No, there are many other bridges to cross. In this context, one should keep in mind that the package of reforms of the Security Council must also include non-permanent seats and also permanent seats for Latin America, for Asia, and also for Germany and Japan. In the past, African states have supported all these campaigns. Africa also must be aware to any foot dragging. We have gone too long for the campaign for reform of the Council, over 30 years now, somewhat. This is because the wheels of time rolls rapidly. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Oh, Suddenly, Maisha. Hallie, Maisha. Imagine living your life and never finding the one outside your time in Aisha. But we both know it's better this way. Manifesting, single and searching, like a virgin.
Chop it. And all your grace. Heaven is the peace in your heart. It's not a place. I gave him my all. I slept on the floor. I take risk anytime I step out of the door. Say me, can I do them bad? Then I'm breaking the law. Anything about the money, I'm getting involved. They told me not to dream big. This thing is bigger than dreams. 10-story building, we talking a couple beams. Tough skin, go get the money by any means. Me mama motivation, my master be posting memes. Time changes from Subin to Wabi Road. Who they want time me be, they carry load. See cannabis, magic diamond, and Sanji gold. Little boy with some money, you know how the story goes.
Jealousy, I see the pain. I'm still working real hard, I'm set today. My future, I don't see from my love. Nobody you got tell me, how I go party. Try and low, fast and holiday. Cause I work and don't play, cause it only pay. Me you see minimum wage, don't be my money. Tell it to small change, if you come my way. Try and low.
I was destined to make it, whether you hate it or love it. Yes, I'm blessed, nothing you can do about it. And we know, empty barrels are always the loudest. Got myself a Lamborghini, it's dropping in August. Used to hang around the corner 2003. But Jimmy Deuce, still a yard, man, alive on the street. I remember how it hold me to sleep in the heat. Now they gotta pay me just to sleep in a beautiful suite. I thought I told you I was gonna be one of the best. I spoke to B-High, can I get Jay on a text? That's some boss talk, and you can hate on the flex. I don't need a middleman, cause I pay all the checks. Oh, this is heaven to me, I came from nothing. All
all this money you see came from rapping. Everybody follow my lead, cause I ain't stopping. Many say they're harder than me, them homies capping. And hey, everything is okay, on a jet to LA. Cause I'm tempted, cause I'm late, and I'm still getting paid. What's the point when you hate, cause I got food on the plate. Think you made a mistake, and ask me how for your fate. Money in the what else? Got the Mercedes for the missus, dead wounds. But you can see the stitches. Ain't no genie granting all your wishes. You gotta work.
I'm still working real hard. I'm so today. My future I don't see from my life.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Hovey, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a tree cannot stand without roots. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.